Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
I'm Julia Tertian, host of Radio Cherry Bomb. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, and welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the gastronomic and economic virtues of a location. Part travel show, part current affairs, Native recognizes the fact that food culture and commerce are everywhere and takes the opportunity to examine this relationship by using the eyes, ears, and taste buds of farmers, chefs, journalists, and the like. Today, we are going to Ireland, and to help us go there, I am joined by Clodagh McKenna. Hi there.
Hi, good morning.
Clodagh is the Irish food ambassador, and she really does it all, and so much, in fact, that I'm not even going to try to just list everything that you do, and rather just jump right in and have you tell us where you are from in Ireland and what all it is that you do.
Okay. Well, it's lovely to be on the show. It's one of my favorite American radio shows. So every time I go back to the States, I try to come on here. So it's lovely to be here.
Thank you.
I was born in Cork, which is in the south of Ireland, which would, I guess, would be kind of like the California of Ireland, in that it's a big food hub there. It's the climate is a little bit different to the rest of the country, especially in the West Cork. It was a beautiful place to grow up. I then used to spend my summers in France growing up, and then I came to New York. I went to NYU, and then I came back again, and I went to Ballymaloe, which is, as you probably know, of Doreen and Rachel and the whole Allen family, who were fabulous. I worked with them for 3 years. I was a chef in the house, in the Ballymaloe house, and then I went and I worked for Slow Food Ireland. I used to run Slow Food Ireland and for about 3 or 4 years, and I set up farmers markets around Ireland. So that was really fun. And I had my own stalls as well at the farmers markets for a long time. And then I wanted to write a book about the whole Irish food movement, because I guess up until that point, Irish food was quite stagnant in that it wasn't setting its own trends. And now it is. And at that time, it really was starting to understand that it too could have its place in the world food culture, and that we thought we were so far away from. But I guess the wonderful thing about the farmers markets is that it drove out so many creative types that might have been sons or daughters of farmers, or people just inspired by food chefs, etc., like myself, who wants to kind of create something. And the wonderful thing about the farmers market is that it gave you a kind of a forum to be able to sell your produce and to feel very comfortable in this kind of creativity.
And how has that grown? What does that look like today? Because you have restaurants, you have definitely more than one book.
Yeah.
You have your television show. Yeah. So tell me more a little bit about those and how it's grown.
Yeah. So from there, then I left Ireland because I wrote my first book, and then I was asked to do a television series on it, where I went around the country making, learning how to make cheese, etc., fishing, all that stuff. It was just fantastic. But I said, now's a good time for me to leave. Since my mug is going to be on the telly, it's a good time to get out of the country. So I went and I actually lived. And I really just really, I mean, I'm just joking there, really, to be honest. The seriousness of it, I just wanted to learn more about food, and I felt a kind of a pressure of being put on a little bit of a small little pedestal as somebody talking about food on television. I was like, damn, I really need to learn a bit more about it and really hone in my skills. So that was about 10 years ago, and I moved to Italy and I worked with Slow Food there. And it was an incredible kind of learning food culture. And then I came back after 4 years, and that's when I set up my own restaurant, which is called Clodagh's Kitchen. And the ethos behind my restaurant is that we, everything, our food is clean. I hope it tastes good. I think it does. And it really supports our local economy.
Excellent.
And our local being the island of Ireland. So we really, I guess, we love that in the restaurant. We love that as chefs. I love it. I thrive on it. The food, the ingredients that come in the back door of the restaurant are clean, are local, and I know where they're coming from.
And I definitely want to talk more about those ingredients in a little bit. I get a real sense from you that as it is about food, it's about communication. You communicate through cooking, you communicate through your books, through your restaurants, your shows. So what is it about food and your culture that really makes you feel a need to share?
I think that's the wonderful thing about food, is that that's what you do, isn't it? It's lovely to kind of cook for another person. When you're cooking for just one person, it's a little
lonely. It's more fun.
It's like more fun. You can even really enjoy it, like being on a date with yourself. You know, if you really get into it, it can be a wonderful thing if you're in that space. But it's lovely sharing food. And you know what the wonderful thing about food is that it does bring people together. And I love that. There's nothing more pleasing to me. I mean, as we're sitting here now, I'm watching two guys right in front of us because the radio is on. Actually, I'm looking at the restaurant. they are enjoying food so much. You know, it relaxes every bone in your body. You feel better when you're eating good food. You know, there's a story behind the food that kind of just fills your mind. And you can create such a wonderful moment in your life around food that I don't think that you can create it through anything else. It just hits those senses that's quite powerful.
So let's talk a little bit more about Ireland. I want to play a little game I like to call breakfast, lunch, dinner.
I love games.
So I'm in Ireland. What are your favorite things to eat for each of those meals? And we're definitely going to add in dessert at the end.
Okay.
So breakfast.
So, oh, for my breakfast.
Yes.
My favorite thing to eat. Gabeen crispy bacon. It's a wonderful farm in West Cork. Oh God, he does a maple cured one. And I would have that with, we do really good brioche in the restaurant. So I'd have that with brioche, toasted. And then I'd probably do like a cardamom mascarpone cream on it. And there's this beautiful new product called, produce coming from Wicklow. And it's, we're making our own maple syrup, well, type of maple syrup, but from apple. And it's an apple syrup from the Highbank Orchard and farm in Ireland. And I'd probably have that like all over it. Yeah.
So when you're hungry again and it's time for lunch.
Yes. Time for lunch? Okay, what would I have? Lunch. Oh, would have maybe, let me see. I think would have to be fish. I love fish. My grandfather was a fisherman as well, as was my late uncle. Seafood, any type of seafood, depending where I was in the country. So let me pick a place. Let's say I'm in Cork, which is such a beautiful place. I live in Dublin now. That's where my restaurants are. But let's say I'm in Cork, in West Cork. I would have fresh mackerel, and because it's not used enough. And it's such a beautiful fish. Really fried really, really well, skin side down. With lovely spices like chili and lime and lemongrass and a lovely salsa with it and a lovely glass of, a really lovely crisp like Arnez or something. I mean, the wine. Oh, that would be delicious.
You have this look on your face, so you're kind of just,
I'm dreaming it.
Going there.
And looking out to sea. Sometimes food is also about being in situ, isn't it?
Yes.
Like I probably wouldn't enjoy sitting down having like the best steak in the world that right in that point in my mind, look out into the sea. It's about being in situ and about eating locally to mm-hmm. that area. So that's why I'm describing geographically as well where I am.
So moving on to dinner, the all time, what would you, your favorite thing to have for an Irish dinner?
Okay. So I'm going to bring you on a trip around the country for my dinner. I'm going to start off with native oysters from Kelly's Farm in Galway. They're the best oysters ever. The last time I had them actually in the sea with Mr. Michael Kelly himself. I brought a couple of friends of mine from Italy came over, and I brought them out. Actually, you know, Crevero Parmesan cheese. Yeah, there's people who make season. They sell it in Italy. That cheese. They came over and we put on our wellies. He brought us out foraging, and we had picked up the oysters. I harvested the oysters and we ate them straight off. And one of the guys had a fabulous bottle of spumante, and we popped it open and we had little cups and we had these fresh native oysters right from the sea, which are so beautiful because the tides there are perfect for these native, and the native oysters are flat and they're pearly and they've just got that freshness of the saltiness of the Atlantic. Absolutely amazing. So then I'd hop on a bus and I'd go to Mayo for a lamb. Oh my God, the lamb in Mayo is absolutely beautiful. So that would be north of Ireland. Their lamb in Ireland is really taking its own at the moment. And the different peninsulas are really owning it. And a lot of the farms are coming together as cooperatives. Connemara has done it. Mayo have now just done it. Achill Island, which is an island off Mayo, is particularly good lamb because it's got the saltiness as well. And of course, the lamb's foraging and they're eating all those lovely indigenous herbs, like herbal flowers, edible flowers that are in that island. Achill Island is definitely a lamb to watch. sorry, I sound like I'm talking about great movie star.
And what am I drinking when I'm having all this? Because I, of course, you know, everyone's like, just Guinness. But
Guinness, well, there's some fabulous microbreweries. In my restaurant, in Clodagh's Kitchen, in the wine bar, we have O'Hara's Brewery, which is absolutely beautiful. They do Guinness like Guinness, how Guinness used to be. Creamy and coffee flavoured, beautiful. They also do a lovely pale ale, 8 degrees beer. Oh my God, they're fabulous, fabulous small microbrewery. There's loads actually now in Ireland.
So beer is a big thing.
Beer is a big thing in Ireland, yeah. It's gorgeous. And it's lovely that because we are so well known for our stouts, it's so lovely to see lots of microbreweries coming up and actually really going, okay, Guinness is big now. Let's really try to make it the way it used to taste. Mm-hmm. So that's fun. And then you want dessert?
Yeah, let's go for dessert.
For dessert, let's go back to my restaurant in Dublin, and let's have a lemon verbena infused carrageen moss with, at this time of the year, would be like rosemary and marsala, roasted peaches on top.
Oh my gosh.
That's one of my favourite. Actually, I'm cooking it this Thursday for my cook evening in the restaurant. That is absolutely beautiful. Carrageen moss is such a wonderful, I mean, I love seaweeds and I love kind of like working with seaweeds.
Can you say a little bit more about what that is?
Yeah, carrageen moss is a seaweed. You buy it usually dried and then you just have to rehydrate it. It basically works. When I say carrageen moss, I guess if you picture a panna cotta, so instead of using gelatine in it, you're using the carrageen moss, mm-hmm. is a natural gelatine, and it also just gives a little whisper of the sea. So it's not like, and I don't want to turn you lovely people at home off thinking, oh my God, I'm having dessert that's going to taste really sea or fishy. It's not like that at all. It's just a little whisper of fresh sea, mm-hmm. That it gives. But it's so good for you as well. It's full of potassium. It's full of iron.
It sounds like not too dissimilar from like agar-agar, where it's a seaweed starch derivative. So
yeah, exactly.
So in your little empire, on your TV shows, Irish Food Trails, and as you just spoke, you're constantly featuring bakers and fishmongers and farmers and cheesemakers. It really appears as if everyone in Ireland has a food-related job. And maybe that's the case, which would be amazing. But how important is food to the economy? And I definitely want to talk about the recession as well, kind of where things are today.
Yeah, it's... you know, I guess food is becoming more and more important. I think that we'll say, going back to my grandparents' day, food was, because we're an island, and certainly back then, and I'm skipping back, let's say, 60 years, we'll say when they were in there, my age now, 50 years ago, food would have been like a number one economy there, and the number one of importance. They really understood it, because being an island... I guess they were thriving and they were brought up to be self-sufficient and completely dependent on their own we'll say, resources within the island. So everything from all the great traditional dishes in Ireland, like from salted cod to spiced beef to all the wonderful smokehouses that we have around the country. They were all really used and really well resourced. And then came the wonderful, you know, late 70s, 80s, and boom, we were hit with so many fast foods. And that kind of wiped out. So there was a whole, they'll say, there was definitely a whole, I'd say, 20 years in Ireland where we completely lost that wonderful food culture. Like, my mother tells me stories of when she was growing up, one of her chores was during the day, like on a Saturday morning, was taking the eggs and laying the eggs. Not laying the eggs, sorry, that sounded strange. Her packing the eggs in between straw so that they would be preserved more underneath in the house. And on a Friday, because my grandpa and my uncle were fishermen, that they would have an open invite to anybody in the village that needed fish. They would give them fish on the Friday because they were Catholics, etc. And it was kind of an open thing. All those wonderful traditions completely lost. And I like, and it's now in the last, I think, 10 years that we're really trying to get back all of those wonderful traditions and also bring on the new kind of food trends and mix them together. And I think that the recession has been fantastic for that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's been the same here as well, but
it forces people to think creatively, to get ambitious, to maybe do something they've always wanted to do but never had the opportunity. And it seems like maybe in that sense it has been a good thing.
Yeah.
Of course, it's been hard. But I love to hear how that's playing out over in Ireland as well.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of people, of course, will listen and maybe kind of go like, you know, the recession can't bring positivity, but I think it can. And out of every negative, there's always a positive, and it's always good to look at, try to see, okay, what can I take from that? And definitely the recession has made people want to be more sustainable, look at their lives and think, okay, what's really important? You know, you hear stories of people who had so much money, big bankers, big property developers, and they're taking their own lives. I mean, that's how bad it was in Ireland, really, like a lot of those people. And I think it really made people understand that, okay, having a great big car and a big house actually means nothing. It means nothing. And what really means something is community and all those kind of big things, and just trying to get more real stuff into your life and more kind of moments into your life with your family, your friends, etc. So like that, going to the farmer's market or going down to your local butcher shop and trying to make moments and making the best of every moment at the present.
Food helps us do that.
Definitely. And of course, helping the local economy. I mean, you go down to your butcher and you support your butcher. He then has money to come into my restaurant, etc. And it's literally like that. Like, my local butcher is Pat Whelan. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's fabulous. You should have him on the show sometime. He's a fantastic butcher. He's my local butcher just around the corner from my house. And he goes into my restaurant with his family like every week. Mm-hmm. Like, and I love that. I was only talking to him on the phone the other day and he was telling me what he had. And I was telling him what I made with this, because I'd always pick up a piece of like meat with him and I'd always bring it down the country, down to my mother's house and carry it with me. And I love that. I love that just economy, or the people who supply me their eggs. You know, once a month they will stop off and they'll have a lovely lunch to celebrate once a month. And it's just a really lovely local economy. It's how it should be.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but stay with us. When I come back, we'll be talking more about Ireland with Clodagh McKenna. Pretty boy sweat. All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you are listening to Native on Heritage Radio Network, and we are talking to the queen of Irish cuisine, Clodagh McKenna. So in the first half of the show, we talked about all these amazing Irish dishes, lamb and mackerel and oysters, but I gotta say, here in the U.S., Irish cuisine is kind of denigrated to this pot pie, pint of Guinness, St. Patrick's Day bar food. And first of all, what's up with that? And second of all, what's it going to take to tap into all of those fabulous things that you were just describing for us in the first half of the show?
come to Ireland. I think, yeah, of course. I mean, we have definitely been given a label of, you know, the bacon and cabbage society, drunk, you know, having exactly with Guinness, you know, and it does take time for, it takes to people coming over and visiting, coming over. I could also say that about America.
I
could also say that, oh my God, this is like, you know,
we have like the hamburger, French fry, hot dog.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And a lot of people would think that about the States, mm-hmm. In Europe. They would think, oh my God, food in America is terrible. Initially, they do think that. But it's through travel, it's through opening your mind, it's through reading, and it's through kind of, you know, self-education that you kind of really get to understand. And it's more and more people visiting Ireland and having good experiences. Mm. And I think that it's really important that, and I think probably people listening to the show probably already do this, so forgive me if I sound like I'm lecturing, but it would be, I think it's important that before you go to a country, to really try to taste the food that's happening right there adds so much to your experience, because you come away with part of that culture, part of what the beat is in that country at the time. And I think that's what will happen. I mean, it's a new food culture that we have now in Ireland, or we'll say a new or revised food culture that we have now in Ireland. And it's exciting. And I love like hearing people, like so many people saying to me, that I meet or whatever, and they're going, oh my God, the Irish raw milk cheeses are absolutely incredible. And I'm like, yes.
And that's a perfect segue to my next question. If someone just can't hop over to Ireland for a vacation, what are products that we can get here that can help us learn more?
Yeah, so loads. The cheeses are, mm-hmm. are kind of, I think, first of all, everything from Bellingham blue cheese, Cashel blue cheese, Durris, which is a fabulous raw milk cheese, Gubbin cheese. All their different oat cake biscuits, like the Ditty's oat cake biscuits, I know you can get as well. I think that at the moment in America, we're still not exporting all our meats. So hopefully when that's lifted, and it'll be easier for producers to be able to send in all their beautiful bacon and sausages, etc., or the black puddings. And I mean, black puddings, when they're really good, black pudding made raw, like we're made of black, you know, fresh black blood, like fresh black blood, is absolutely beautiful. It's so good. I actually made fresh black pudding the last time I was in America with maybe I shouldn't say this on the show,
please,
but with fresh pig blood we got in New York State for a dinner that I did here, and it was absolutely fantastic. But so yeah, so all of those kind of produce. But I think that just like, for example, if I taste something out of the country, I think that it's when people come to Ireland. Mm-hmm. I think then really make that, like, you know, do a little bit of research into it. When you're in Galway, do have the native oysters and drive for them. Like you're in Galway, say they drive to wherever they are serving those native oysters. Take them with you. Find that fabulous spot on top of the cliffs overlooking the Atlantic and eat them there fresh. That'll be a moment you'll never forget the rest of your life. It takes you all day to make that happen. Make that happen. If you go to Cork, go to the English market, you know, and find, try to taste the spiced beef that's there, or the fresh blood pudding that we make, or the salted cod that's there. You know, when you're in Dublin, you know, taste the different things like the coddle, which is having a really fabulous revised effect actually in Dublin at the moment. Some restaurants are doing really fun things with it. So there's, I think that's what I mean, is that when you're in situ, like when you're in here, like all I want to do is have one of those fabulous Roberta pizzas. They look so good. And by the way, your garden is so inspiring, and the Roberta's garden, yes, is fantastic.
Like they do an amazing, amazing job, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and better and better. And yeah.
And it touches everybody. So I live all the way over in Ireland, in Dublin, and in my stomach right now, I'm already going, I have to grow a fig tree outside of my restaurant. And why am I not growing tomato plants in my wine bar? So thank you, Roberta's, for the little inspiration. It will be brought back to Dublin. So
excellent. I love that connection. So we touched on this a little bit, talking about community. But I want to ask about what food culture revolves around in different parts of the world. Food pulls people together for different reasons. In the U.S., Thanksgiving is a big reason. That's a very big food holiday. In the Middle Eastern countries, you know, it's Ramadan and fasting. And is there a holiday in Ireland that, or a specific occasion, a sporting event that is special, or are there dishes that you will kind of only see once a year?
Yeah, lots. They're everything from, we'll say, Easter.
Okay.
Easter in Ireland, and I don't know if it's the same here, but Easter in Ireland traditionally it would have been the first of the spring lamb.
Yes.
Now, I actually do prefer summer lamb to spring lamb. It's kind of a big kind of topic for it's foodie conversation, which is better. I do prefer summer lamb, but it's a lot of the households in Ireland, I would say 99% of houses in Ireland on Easter Sunday will be eating spring lamb. I mean, that's
kind of like our turkey.
Yeah.
For Thanksgiving.
Exactly. It would be funny not to be eating anything else. And what other ones then? On St. Patrick's Day, it would be, you know, lovely bacon and cabbage. And I have to say, when bacon and cabbage is done well, it's absolutely brilliant. I love it. Like, if it's cooked really, really beautiful, it can be gorgeous. So I love traditional dishes like that too. It's funny, somebody just asked me the other day, they said to me, oh God, I need to cook a dinner for somebody really special, you know, and I don't really cook that much at all. Like, I really want to impress them and, you know, give them something personal for me. And I said to them, what is it that was the most gorgeous, comforting, touching dish that you had when you grew up? You know, now that we're talking about like those special kind of dishes. And that's the dish that you hold on to and cook. But so that's kind of like what bacon and cabbage is for me. So bacon and cabbage be like something
that's like a comfort food.
A comfort food, okay. Yeah, exactly. And whatever. I mean, at home, in my own home, in my mom and dad's home in Kerry, we would always have fish on Friday.
And that's a religious, that comes from a religious tradition?
It comes from a religious tradition, exactly. And because my mother's family were a fishing family, so they would always stick with that. But yeah, we'd always have fish on Friday. It's just lovely because you always make sure you always have fish once a week.
And you're always home on Friday.
Always home on Friday.
Always make sure you're home on Friday.
And always a roast on a Sunday. And at Christmas time, we'd always have about five different types of potato with the turkey. Yeah, it's exhausting.
Well, we are about out of time, but I just want to ask in general, it seems like you've kind of already answered this question through your enthusiasm, but are you optimistic about what you're seeing happening in food, both at Ireland and abroad through your travels?
I am. I think people who are doing kind of very kind of sustainable projects like Roberta's here, or like my own, I look at my restaurant as being sustainable because I am going with directly to producers locally and they're becoming more sustainable. It makes me
creating
more sustainable.
The supply chain.
Exactly. Creating that chain. We're getting stronger. And the more we grow, the more the food culture will become stronger. And that makes us all more powerful against the big guys. And the big guys, I mean, like the big chains.
Of course.
That have a lot of marketing power, a lot of political power, etc. And that's what it is in the end of the day. It's just making us all stronger, but growing together. Like, and that's why I always stick with my, like a lot of people say to me, because you're so good, you always, like my mother would say, you always have him as your crab supplier, you always have that person. Because I'm actually quite adamant about it. Like, whoever I start with producers, I bring them along the way with me. The minute you drop them, their company goes into jeopardy and you're not keeping that chain stronger and stronger and growing together.
So like creating your own ecosystem.
Absolutely. I feel like they're partners in my restaurant. Yeah.
Well, what's up? What's next for you? World domination? I feel like what's left? More books, more TV shows, more restaurants? Are you going to have a restaurant here?
I'd love to do that sometime. I'd love to do a really beautiful Clodagh's Kitchen restaurant in New York or somewhere. But I love New York, so I'd probably do it here. I would maybe someday, once my own restaurant could handle me being away for a while, I'd love to do it. Just so people get a really wonderful taste of Irish kind of contemporary cuisine. I'd love that. But I'm writing another book at the moment. My deadline is in about 2 weeks' time, and it's called Clodagh's Irish Kitchen, and it's just what we spoke about.
Yes.
It's actually bringing all those wonderful dishes onto the pages so you can open up and you can go, this is where Irish food is today. So really fresh take on all of the different dishes, new and old.
Well, I do hope that you consider opening a restaurant here so we do have someone of an authority on the subject kind of helping us here, because I know we need it. We need that take on Irish cuisine, for sure. A fresh take, I think. And where can people find out more about you?
I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, and my website, ClodaMcKenna.com.
Excellent. Well, that's all for us this week. You are listening to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Brianna Kurtz. That's all for today's show. Thank you so much to my guest, Clodagh McKenna. We'll be back here next week, same time, same place.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.